That's Allison Krause, along with the Cox family. Love Me Like a Rock. Heard from Ginger Millerman, too, who he says he is, the name of her song. It's about 12 minutes now past the hour on a Tuesday morning here along the Broken Road. We're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don is a member of the board at Creation Moments and a vineyron with his vineyard down in Garden Valley, Texas, just about 90 miles, something like that, from Dallas, northeast of Dallas there. Is there a regional name for that part of Texas? You'd just say near Dallas, or is it the Hill Country? Is it what?
Oh, no, it's called East Texas. It's called East Texas. Okay. You say East Texas, people say, oh, yeah, I know where that is.
Well,
I mean, if you're from Texas, or at least if you're from East Texas, you know where it is. If you're from some other part, you might not know.
Would that include like Beaumont and Corpus Christi? Because they're in East Texas.
They are, but that's the South.
Oh, that's the South. Okay, I'm sorry.
Corpus Christi would be way south.
Yeah.
That's a long ways away.
Okay. All right. Yep. Well, then Garden Valley, Texas, down East Texas.
East Texas, yes. I mean, I would almost consider it Northeast Texas, but it's...
That's kind of my thoughts, yeah. And Dallas, I've seen Dallas. Last time I remember seeing it as the airplane took off, going back home to California. This was years ago, and it looked incredibly flat. It looked like just a pool table with tall buildings. But you're in hill country, aren't you?
Yes, it is hilly around us, and so that's why we have valleys, and that's why we live in the valley. We live in Garden Valley.
Well, they kind of go together, hills and valleys, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah. It's rolling, it's rolling hills. And actually, if you look at it from the plane, you can see as you head further east in Texas, you get these waves. I mean, literally waves of rolling hills going through the eastern part of Texas and over into Louisiana a little bit. But then it levels off again once you get into Louisiana.
Is there like an altitude gain of a few feet?
A few feet.
Well, 10, 15 feet.
It's probably a couple of hundred feet. A
couple hundred feet, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. We've established Don's presence in East Texas then, where there is this vineyard that he's growing, and he's planted. You started this vineyard all on your own, didn't you?
Yes, about 5 years ago.
Okay.
Actually, this was our fifth growing season.
Okay.
Wow.
And at some point during the past 5 years, did it cross your mind that I'm going to genetically modify these grapes too, because I want to change the color. I want to change the sweetness maybe, or I just want bigger grapes. And so you would go into the Valle di Pace laboratory, and you would genetically modify these grapes. You would take little tweezers, and you would put DNA in one grape from another one, and you would see what happens. And then lightning would strike, and it would come alive.
Yeah.
No, it really
did. We have a big laboratory here for experimental experimental crops like that. There is a group at UC Davis actually who is doing genetic. It's more. They're using DNA markers to. They do obviously hybrid crossing. Between French varietal grapevines and American grapevines that are resistant to a disease down here. It's called Pierce disease. And Pierce disease, anyway, affects the phloem and blocks up the tubes in the vines.
I remember that word from botany, xylem and phloems. Yeah.
Yep. So it clogs up. It's due to a bacterial infection, and so they have actually used genetic markers to find out which of their crosses have the Pierce disease resistance and which don't. And of course, they concentrate their studies on those that do.
Let's assume that they succeed in the wildest fashion. They go, oh boy, we've done it. We've eradicated this disease. Let's go with that. And so you buy some of those grapes and you plant them and you make wine from them. How do we know that it's just as safe to drink that wine as it was to drink non-GMO wine? I mean, how would we even suspect that changing that DNA would have an effect on the safety of the wine? Would that be tested ever?
Well, now there's a big difference between genetically modified products or vegetables and plants versus hybridization. Hybridization's been going on since God created the plants. and it's a natural process because you can do hybridization just by taking pollen from from one plant and you know, fertilizing, for example, the flower, and then getting the seeds and then seeing what you got. So the hybridization is a much, much different process than genetically modifying a plant. Genetically modifying a plant, you are actually inserting new DNA into the plant material. So in the previous case that I was discussing about trying to develop Pierce resistant, let's say Cabernet Sauvignon, which would be very valuable, especially here in East Texas, is just a hybridization process. You've got DNA from a grapevine already, let's say from an American native grapevine that is Pierce disease resistant, and then you take the DNA and from a French varietal grape, and you're merging them together. Now you don't do that in a test tube. It's more, you know, the hybridization process of the tedious process of taking, for example, the pollen from one from one vine and the flower from another vine, and then you're trying to pollinate, you know, the flower in order to produce a different, hybrid vine that has the properties. What you want in this case is you want the properties, the Pierce disease resistant properties of the native American vine, but you want the taste of the native or the Cabernet Sauvignon, for example. So what you wind up doing is doing this process multiple times. And I think they're up to 99%+ Cabernet Sauvignon and, you know, less than 1% or 1% of the Native American. And they're doing tasting trials, and they planted these vines. They're doing tasting trials with the grapes and comparison between the native French vines versus these hybrid vines. And they're probably at near the stage of actually putting some of these out out for the market.
Okay,
but that's a totally different process of, for example, taking DNA, a segment of DNA from, let's take BT corn, for example. So with BT corn, you have the corn, obviously, but what does BT stand for?
Yeah, what does it stand for?
It's the name or the initial of the bacteria that produces a protein toxin that is toxic to the corn borer, for example. So when the corn borer eats the corn plant with this foreign protein in it, then the corn borer, you know, it tears up their intestines, basically, and the corn borer, the worm, dies. But in that, you know, in that case, they had to take the actual DNA from this bacteria, isolate out the gene that expresses this protein, and insert that into the genes for the corn. So that is genetically modified. So the previous example, it wasn't genetically modified, it's just hybridization. In this case, you are actually genetically modifying a plant. You're introducing a new gene into the plant, in this case corn, that didn't exist before, and now the plant is producing this foreign protein that naturally isn't there.
Now, you mentioned UC Davis, which was kind of got me on this track, because that was originally an agricultural school, and they do tons of research and experimentation yet with genetically modified organisms. And Monsanto, located not far from there. In fact, I suspect they share some personnel with Monsanto. I want to read you a part of this article at Mercola, and then I want your comments on it. Dr. Mercola writes, between 1997 and 2002, the number of peanut allergies doubled, and the number of hospitalizations related to allergic reactions to food increased by 265%. Between 1997 and 2011, food allergies of all types among children rose by 50%. Today, an estimated 15 million Americans and 17 million Europeans have some form of food allergy. Incidents of celiac disease and other forms of food intolerance have also become more common. Now, the Europeans have reacted to this trend, and maybe other trends as well, and outlawed GMO products. We have not done that here yet. When do we get the message?
Well, that's that brings up a very good question, because actually Europe is now allowing genetically modified products in, but from the very start of this whole industry, Europe said, hey, wait a minute. We don't know what the results, how this is going to affect people. No long-term studies have been done. And so if you're going to bring a product in, you have to label it as genetically modified. Mm-hmm. And that's the key, because Europeans could look on the package and say, oh, it says genetically modified. I don't want that one. I want the natural one. Whereas here in America, we don't have that choice.
Yeah, people, at least there's a lobby out there that resists labeling as GMO.
Oh, there's a big lobby. Yeah. The grocers, the Grocery Manufacturing Association has blocked, and we've talked about this before, but there was a recent article, even today in Mercola, that talked about that they have been found guilty of basically interfering with the election process in the state of Washington back in 2013, when labeling of GMO products was on the ballot, and they had a campaign to say no GMO labeling, basically, on the products, and that initiative failed by about 1% or so, because they were pumping millions of dollars into the state of Washington so that their products wouldn't be labeled. Now, mm-hmm. what they're being fined for, the largest fine in the United States for election fraud, basically, election disclosure fraud, because the GMA, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, would not disclose who they were getting donation money from. So the GMA was donating and was promoting, this anti-labeling campaign. But the people who were donating to the GMA were, of course, Coca-Cola, Monsanto, General Mills, a lot of the large the large food and drink manufacturers were contributing. And so, but they didn't want their name associated with the donation, so the GMA hid it, unlike what happened in California, where their names were associated and there was a tremendous backlash to the food industry because of their lobbying against the labeling of GMO
and
products.
These companies include Pepsi-Cola and Coca-Cola and General Mills and who knows who else.
Yeah, so a lot of any major food manufacturer here in the United States contributes to that organization, and it's their political arm that tries to keep labeling away from the American public. Now, if you get labeling in one state, that will affect all of the products in every state, because what manufacturer is going to say, well, I'm just going to specifically label the product for Washington, the state of Washington, for example, I have to label it with the warning of GMO label on it, but I'm not going to do that for the neighboring state of Oregon, for example. Well, you know, that's a lot of labeling and a lot of specific moving products around, so that's probably not going to happen. So if one state gets it, especially a large state like Texas or California or Washington or something, then it more than likely it will go across the country. So that's why there's big bucks going in to fight this whole process.
So why do you suppose they object to identifying a product as containing genetically modified organisms?
Well, because research now has been coming out to say that, hey, you know, these products, which they said was perfectly safe, and even the FDA from the very beginning took an unusual stand to say that, genetically modified products, we'll just say that they're grass. That is generally recognized as safe and effective.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was absolutely no basis to that discussion, to that decision, because genetically modified products had not been on the market before, and it certainly makes a difference as to what the genetic modification is.
And again, this largely stems from the 1990s when this genetically modified business really began.
Yes, about the middle of, in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we've got 20 years behind this, and, we're getting all kinds of illnesses. I mean, the earliest ones were food allergies that you talked about earlier, but it goes to as far as cancers, skin-related symptoms and diseases, neurological changes, all kinds of nutritional deficiencies. And here's some of the problems. You've got basically two different classes of genetic modification. One is the BT, like the BT corn and the BT cotton, for example, that I talked about before, where you actually insert a foreign protein, the gene for a foreign protein, into these crops. And thereby, you make the crop a pesticide. So the crop itself becomes a pesticide. It's a natural pesticide, but it's a pesticide. But the problem with that is that is a foreign protein. And we normally don't eat that protein. And so it causes all kinds of problems in us. And a matter of fact, this protein gets passed through cow's milk. So the cows eat the corn, and they digest the genetic modification. They digest this protein. It gets into the milk. We feed the milk to our children, and voila, they start having arterial sclerosis.
Mm-hmm.
Because this protein gets lodged in the blood vessels, and as a result, plaques form, natural plaques form around this foreign protein, because the body says, hey, there's a foreign substance here. I need to protect the body from the foreign substance. So it encapsulates it. Well, you start encapsulating areas in your blood vessels, and your blood vessels start clogging up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, kids 10 years old have, coming down with serious circulatory and heart conditions because of the milk that they're drinking. So that's a problem. The other class of genetic modification is herbicide-tolerant plants, for example. And the first one that came out was, of course, Roundup. They're called Roundup Ready or glyphosate-resistant, whether it be soybeans or cotton or corn. And it allows you to spray your crops with Roundup or glyphosate to kill the weeds, and it doesn't kill the crop. So it doesn't kill the crop, the cotton or the corn.
So you can spray indiscriminately over a whole field.
You can spray indiscriminately. You don't have to be selective about it. And if you get a little bit or a lot on your corn, It doesn't matter because it's not gonna you know kill the plant. Well, we've got two problems, but the major problem is that these plants are sprayed, even in some cases, as wheat and canola, for example, they're sprayed right before harvest with glyphosate. And Monsanto said, "Oh, you don't have to worry about glyphosate. You can bathe in it. You can do all kinds of stuff. It's an innocuous compound, and by the way, when it hits the ground, it degrades." Well, we know that is not true. It hangs around for a long time, and as you spray your crops with this material or with this compound, it gets into the kernels of grain, for example, and now you're digesting this the glyphosate. Well, glyphosate, the main mechanism of how it works is it chelates metals. It chelates calcium, for example. It chelates magnesium. These are metals, obviously, that plants need in order to thrive and to grow. And getting into a weed, you know, it basically starves the plants of minerals. Mm-hmm. And so you ingest this. Guess what it's doing to your intestines?
Deprives you of those minerals.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's sucking out the minerals from your intestinal tract, and then you're calcium deficient, or you're magnesium deficient, or you're this or you're that, and pretty soon your intestines get inflamed, and now you've got Crohn's disease. You've got all these different types of irritable bowel syndrome, for example.
There are a bunch of terms, maladies, that I never used to hear about, but I hear about them now all the time on the TV. This is sweeping America. You know, buy this pharmaceutical, it'll fix you. But they're referring to diseases that never seemed to be a problem in the past.
Well, yes, because we're introducing pesticides and herbicides and fungicides into our mm-hmm. food supply. And these genetically modified products or crops that are not innocuous and are having a deleterious effect to the health of the people that are eating these crops.
You know, I've seen solutions. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a detergent that you buy now to wash your fruits and vegetables in. That's supposedly be better than just water. Just rinsing them off isn't enough. But I also read, and that's a little alarming in itself, to think you got to buy another special product to clean your food before you can eat it. But there are certain fruits and vegetables that doesn't work on, like apples, for example, where the material is woven into the fabric of the apple. It's internalized, and washing the outside doesn't get rid of it.
Yep, doesn't do a thing, and that's mm-hmm. the same thing with the corn or the soybeans, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's internal. So, yeah. The glyphosate gets absorbed into the plant, and so it's in the grain as you eat the grain, and so that's not going away. So, I mean, here you have a company that developed, for example, BT corn in the first place, or herbicide resistant corn, and now there's herbicide resistant and BT corn in the same kernel, in the same seed. So Monsanto develops that seed. Monsanto then says, "Oh, I've got this herbicide that you need to use in order to keep your fields clean." And so it's a win-win for Monsanto, and it's a lose-lose for the consumer, because now you've got toxins out there in various forms in the food supply, and Monsanto is saying, "Oh no, we can't label them genetically modified because people might not buy our products." Well, almost 80% of the corn sold in this country is genetically modified, and so you can't. Any box of cereal that you pick up, or cornmeal, or cornbread, or is going to be more than likely
corn starch, corn syrup. There's corn all over the place.
Yes, and it gets into the corn syrup. That protein that I was talking about before is in corn syrup. So you use the corn syrup, and not only do you have the effects of the added sugar, but you've got the deleterious effects of this protein that now is circulating through your body, that your body says, I got to do something with this. I can't digest it. So then it starts encapsulating it and causing all kinds of havoc in your system.
Now, I have seen, and this is the other side of the coin, many, many new products now will say non-GMO. And it may or may not be organic, but it often will say non-GMO specifically, not just natural, because that term doesn't mean anything, but specifically non-GMO. So apparently some food producers have reacted to the situation, and it's a good marketing ploy too. I mean, non-GMO, people obviously are starting to buy that stuff or they wouldn't be making so much. What's the FDA's position on this now?
Oh, the FDA has been a servant to these food manufacturers and from the very beginning. I mean, that was evident from the point of they're calling these products grass products, generally recognized as safe. Well, I mean, a grass product, something like aspirin, for example, has been around for eons. But these were brand new, and they called them grass, and the FDA had absolutely no reason to do that, other than something must have been going on under the table. So if you're expecting the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, to be the safety net for our government, it has long been bought out by big industry.
And, of course, another challenge in all this is that if there's a field of corn in one part of the countryside growing GMO corn and a field next to it growing non-GMO corn, it's likely it's all GMO corn just because of the way corn pollinates and other grains and products.
Well, and in the earlier years, Monsanto would send their scientists out, collect corn from the field next door, and then had the gall in to sue the non-GMO farmer that, hey, you've planted GMO corn and you're not paying us a royalty on it. And that happened over and over and over again. And the poor farmer was saying, you contaminated my product. I'm trying to produce non-GMO material and you contaminate and you sue me. And of course, you know, you got this big organization, this big corporation with tons of resources and money suing this
and a legal department.
Yeah, and a legal department, and the farmer has no legal department, right? I mean, he can't afford any type of defense against that. Go ahead.
Are you running into any of that where you are? I'm not sure what you would be spraying on your grapes, or what neighboring farmers would be spraying on their grapes. But is there anything, and not necessarily Monsanto, and not necessarily corn pollen, but is there anything that you've come up with face to face that yourself in East Texas?
No, not really, because they haven't figured it out how to genetically, like I said, genetically modify grapevines yet, or the grape, the grape to their benefit. We can use glyphosate, for example, or we can use Roundup as long as we don't spray it on the green leaves. I mean, you can spray it on the stalks of the vines. So it is relatively, in quote, relatively easy to get weed control. In the vineyard, by doing that, I hate to do it, but here in East Texas, the weeds, as soon as the vines start growing, so do the weeds, and if you don't get a handle on it, then it kind of overtakes you, and you've got twice to three times, four times the amount of work to do.
You know, another defoliant comes to mind, and this name rings true back from the 60s, and in Vietnam in particular, and that's Agent Orange, which was used as defoliant. And I'm reliably told that all over the country, where railroad tracks ran, the railroads would use Agent Orange to keep down vegetation along the tracks. And so there's a likelihood that that stuff is still in the soil and it stays there for a long, long time. And who knows what health problems that could be causing even today, even with no trains running on those tracks.
Well, half of the product in Agent Orange is a herbicide called 2,4-D.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can go in the Tractor Supply or any place and find 2,4-D herbicide. And now that Roundup has run its course and we're getting super weeds that are resistant, naturally resistant to Roundup, they are now developing genetically modified products, genetically modified grain, for example, or crops that are 2,4-D resistant as well.
So
the farmer can now spray 2,4-D in his field. And now, maybe
surely there are restrictions on that, though, of some kind. No?
Well, they're going through. It's going through the FDA without any any problems. So, you know, here's we just as Americans need to become aware and demand that our products be labeled. You know, if it's got a GMO product in it, the product should and must. I mean, it's the only reasonable thing to do. It must be labeled.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is going to be a big boost to the organic industry because it is, and we need to publish the make the public aware of the negative effects of these products. But the like I said, the food industry has been, food and beverage industry has been so strong as a lobbying group against any of that getting out, and even faking the research. They would hire this independent research company to do research studies, and this independent research group was funded by the food industry. So not independent at all.
No. I think I'm going to add this whole idea to my Trump list.
Yeah, there you go.
Going to mail it in there.
The
initial article that I sent a link to in the chat window is in part about a movie called Consumed. And the movie trailer is available at the Mercola website if you just follow that first link in the window. And it talks about, it's a Danny Glover movie, and it's about this very topic that we've been talking about. And it's about a family with a young son's mysterious health problem, and they track it down. And it's defined here as kind of an action thriller kind of movie. It's hard to imagine an action thriller based around GMOs, but the intrigue between legal staffs and chemical companies and the FDA and human longevity can get pretty dramatic, I would think. And maybe it's time we looked at this thing and took it seriously and wrote some letters to people to you know, enforce the idea this needs attention, that it's time that because Mercola has been a great voice for this for some time, and he has a lot of authoritative articles on the website. You might want to get familiar with it, including food recommendations and diet plans and things to keep you away from this stuff. And you may, like so many people now, have celiac disease or think you do, or be lactose intolerant or this or that. Now, a lot of these things have come to a head over the last 20 years, more and more people saddled with these ailments of various kinds. This could be the reason, and it's time we focused attention on it. Dr. Don, we're glad for your time, and thank you for your explanation. Almost said expletives, but that wouldn't have worked because there were no expletives.
Can I ask one more question before you go to music?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And this would be a short question. The in January of this year, Lisa Murkowski in Alaska was able to get the FDA to stop importing, or at least the United States to stop importing, something called the aqua salmon. And that, you know, it was referred to then by the derisive name frankenfish.
It's
genetically modified. It grows twice as fast as a normal salmon. That was January, and it was successful in at least stopping the importation of the fish until it's labeled, but there had to be research as to how it was going to be labeled and what we'd call it and those kinds of things. Have you heard anything more since then?
I haven't heard anything more about that. I haven't done any more research on it, but Yeah, that was a, it's, you know, when we start in any of this type of, you know, product, when you start modifying what God has already created and man thinks that he's going to do a better job, we can expect, you know, deleterious effects from our efforts, and not that we're going to improve things.
It reminds me of that.
I just looked up Frankenfish and on there's an article on factcheck.org that says that it's just fine. It's okay. Yeah. Don't worry. These are older articles. So I haven't seen anything that's newer than January of 2016 that says anything about the Frankenfish.
Hmm.
So
okay. Well, interesting.
We'll see.
Interesting. Reminds me of that old Nancy Sinatra song, you know. You've been a messin' where you shouldn't been messin'. And we're messin'. These boots
these
were made for
walking.
These
fish are wearing
boots. Yeah. They can walk right into your nets. Dr. Don, thank you so much. Have a great week there down in East Texas, Garden Valley, Texas. And good to have you back. We missed you for a couple of weeks. So will we see you next week?
Yes, I'll be around next week.
Okay, we'll look forward to that, too. Take care of yourself, okay?
Bye-bye. You folks take care as well.